Tom, you want to call this meeting to order?
Yep, I call this meeting to order.
Okay, great. So, I mean, we just wanted to make everyone aware of our budget situation, our fundraising needs. I think we're going to probably start being more aggressive about our fundraising than we've been in a while. I'm not sure exactly how much we'll do. We're going to do it the way we normally do, which is kind of go to the, you know, to the inner circle first, see how much we can raise from them. But also, as usual, I think we're going to be public about our needs. That doesn't mean trying to raise from individuals, but it does mean just being public, making blog posts. And so, we want to make sure everyone's on the same page about that, understands where the needs are coming from, at least over the next 12 months. I think we're going to want to have another conversation later about kind of more down the line what our vision of Givewell's operating expenses is. So I wanted to just get everyone on the same page regarding that, and also because of, you know, the relationship with Good Ventures, I think some questions have come up around kind of who should pay for what. So this meeting is our attempt to kind of all clarify all that, put our views out there, get on the same page about it, and then if we're in agreement, I think that's when we would move forward with kind of writing up our needs and our plan for fundraising in a more public way. That's the basic plan, and I think maybe we can just go through, unless someone has some big high-level comments or something they think is urgent for us to address, we can move through the different sections of this main document, this attachment A, in order and see what people have to say on it. Does that sound okay to everyone?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So part one, part one is we've been rethinking our general philosophy around fundraising. How much is appropriate for our operating expenses to be, who we should raise that from, and that is the attachment B that we sent over. And in a nutshell, I mean, I think it's reasonable if it's what we think is needed to do good research and to put out a good product. I think it's reasonable to generally think about multiplying the money moved or the grants by 15%. And then saying that is, an appropriate amount to spend on operating expenses or a justifiable amount to spend. Some foundations spend more than that, some spend less. If you look across other industries, which we were encouraged to do, you'll see some industries in which that's, the number's bigger, some which it's smaller, but it looks like a pretty reasonable number. And I think the foundation comparison is definitely the most reasonable one because, you could definitely, if we're just talking about overhead, you could talk about, the fact that even after our overhead comes out, the grants are going to charities that have their own overhead. That's a point that was raised in the past. We recognize that point. That point also applies equally to foundations. And I think we made a good effort to get our numbers in the same terms as their numbers and, find something analogous to money moved, which is the grants they're making. And I think the comparisons we're making are pretty fair. So I think 15% is a pretty fair number in general. And then when we think about, who and where it should come from. I mean, GiveWell doesn't want to be an organization that is just supported by a very small number of donors. That's not good for our long-term stability. It's not good for our credibility. And so I think where we're going is we're starting with the question of how much money move do we expect from individuals, from that kind of definition of, people who are not mega donors. And I think for the coming year, for 2013, our guess would be somewhere around $9 million. From individuals, maybe it'll be more, maybe it'll be less, which would imply that we could justify operating expenses of up to $1.35 million. That's more than we expect to actually spend. So that I think we're going to try and raise it in kind of a general public-facing way. That doesn't mean the major donors don't make any contribution. We're going to ask major donors to make contributions. But then at the point where we're kind of getting above that number, and or we're really doing things differently than we would if we weren't serving the major donors, that's where we're going to ask the major donors to really take on sort of the more disproportionate support and say, if let's say that we felt we should spend $2 million to optimally produce major donor-focused research, I think then we would say, okay, well, that has to be justified based on more than the dollars coming from individuals, and that money should probably be raised by the ones that are, that are planning to spend more. So that's the general philosophy. We laid it out in attachment B, and this is probably a good time to take questions on that.
Can you review a little bit of your history of revenues and expenses over the last, say, 3 years or so?
Yeah. Our revenue. So it would take me a minute to pull up the exact numbers. I mean, I think We've historically been in the range of kind of $300,000 to $700,000 a year, depending on how many staff we have. And so the last time that this came up was, I think, a couple of years ago, and there was a blog post about it, and I could pull it up while we're talking if it would be helpful. It would take me a minute. But, you know, we projected a decent-sized gap, $100,000 or $200,000, and we kind of went to a lot of the individual donors and we asked if they could put up some more, and then a couple of the grants we weren't sure were going to come through came through, and we ended up closing the gap pretty quickly. And, you know, when we look at the situation now, we have this projected revenue of about $650,000, which is, I would say, is in line with our expenses from a year or two ago, but not with our conservatively projected expenses for the next year. And I think that, you know, the last time we did a major fundraising play was when our projected money moved, was probably closer to $3 million. And so it's kind of in the range of 15% of that. It's kind of what you would expect. And so, you know, it's been a while since we had, I think our going forward operating expenses are a good amount larger than they have been in the past. And it's also been a while since we really tried in earnest to do a fundraising drive. So, you know, it's definitely changing. I mean, that said, you know, looking backward, our expenses, I think, are around $700,000. And the $1.1 million is a conservative projection. I expect it to come in under that. That projection is really if we're very aggressive and frankly, very lucky on the hiring front. I think we'd consider ourselves very lucky if we ended up with enough people that we wanted to hire to spend all that money. But, you know, if we were, then we would definitely want to do it and we'd want to spend it. So I don't know. That was kind of rambly. If you want more exact numbers, I can certainly pull them up. But that's kind of the story.
I think it would be useful, and it's probably outside the scope. You know, nobody wants to sit on the phone call while you sort of dig around. But it would be useful probably to you know, because right now what we see is a kind of a drill down on a quarterly basis here on this one document of forward expenses. There's nothing here about revenues, but it would be useful to have a document that maybe gave us, let's say, go back about 3 years and maybe forward about two, so maybe about a kind of a five-year window of what revenues and expenses have been and or are projected or desired to be, and possibly just a very slight level of breakdown in terms of each of those, you know, on the revenue side, how much from or from the you know, different foundations, how much, you know, not 30 line items, but two or three line items are sort of the biggest things.
We've done that in past board meetings. That wouldn't be too hard to pull up in terms of how much comes from where. And let's take this part off the record, but I can tell you that, you know, there's two major, actually, let's not take it off yet because I don't really need to give names necessarily. There's two major institutional donors, each of which has generally given us about $100,000 a year. Our largest individual donation has generally been about $75,000 a year, and the rest of it has come from $50,000 and under donations. And, you know, a good chunk of it has been from a large number of $5,000 donations, $5,000 to $10,000 donations. But we have just old board materials will have all this information. I mean, they'll talk about what our expenses, they always have kind of the, you know, the backward-looking budget, the forward-looking budget, the revenue, where the revenue is coming from. And historically, we've been very conservative because hiring is a very hard thing to predict. So we always are projecting to spend more than we end up spending. We always come in under budget. That's how it's been, because we want to leave that room if we find enough outstanding people to go ahead and take action.
Sure. No, it's that's all fine. I'm just saying if it's not that hard to do, and again, I'm not looking for it now, but at some point in the next few days, if it's not that hard to do, if you guys could just maybe pull together the most recent document you had like that and then update it with more, with current figures. And I would appreciate that. Maybe the other board members would as well.
I mean, just so you know, if you were to go to our official records page on our website, just go under About and go to official records and start pulling board documents, you'll see all these looking backward, looking forward budgets for whatever meeting you want. So we can pull that together for you, but if you feel like doing it on the call, you can certainly do that.
Okay.
So this is Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say a couple things. First of all, I think it's really good that you guys are focusing on trying to be more aggressive in hiring. I mean, I think one of the things we talked about in the past is in order to sort of serve both masters of, you know, GiveWell 1.0 and GiveWell 2.0, you know, what's really required is to grow. And I think if you guys can If you're comfortable doing that at this point, you feel like you've kind of gotten the management issues down and the high, and you know, better feel for sort of how to hire, which is kind of what you indicated in the documents. I think this is really positive.
Yep.
I would say I'd be curious about two questions. One is, what kind of visibility do you have on potential major donors, and sort of how easy or difficult do you expect the objective to be? And then the second question is, in terms of justifying the budget, I think I've mentioned this in the past, and I still kind of wonder, you know, does it make sense in the context of the blog, perhaps, to have a little bit of a discussion about what's, you know, can you make an apples and apples comparison of donating to GiveWell versus donating to one of the top charities? And you know, just sort of maybe have a little bit of a discussion about what's the actual value of, you know, educated, well-researched impact investing or impact donating.
Yeah, I mean, I think the analysis there would be pretty simple, which is we got our money moved, we've got our operating expenses, and you know, we'll go ahead and argue that the, you know, in some sort of very long run average sense, that the spending that money on the operating expenses allows all that money to be moved, so it's like, you know, an X to one return, like a 10-to-1 return or something. And you know, I think that's a pretty good argument over some very long term. To really get into the nitty gritty of exactly where the marginal dollar works is something that I think we will not need to do to raise the money that we're looking to raise. And if we do, then we'll get into it, because it's certainly, you know, it's something that we do try to do, if looking hard enough at a giving opportunity, and we can talk more about what that is. But it's much more of a long-term bet, because a lot of the money we move today is based on research that we've done years ago, and a lot of the research we're doing now is based on the hope that will, you know, that will affect a lot of big philanthropists down the line that aren't showing up in our numbers very much right now.
Yeah, I think the long-term approach is valuable, and you know, I think GiveWell's donors are going to want to see sort of how you think about it. So, and in some ways, I think it kind of goes with, you know, the conversation we had last board meeting about your compensation. I think that's those kinds of discussions about how charities and giving opportunities operate and how they should be funded. I think those are important discussions to have, and I think we're in a good position to have it. So, you know, I wouldn't want it to be a major distraction, but I think you know, the GiveWell blog is a good home for that debate, and I think it would be a pretty interesting debate.
Yeah, I imagine we'll at least discuss the topic. I mean, whether we're going to do a lot of extra analysis to quantify that marginal dollar, I don't know. That's something that we often decline to do, because it's a big investment. But I think, in general, having the discussion online, I think is good. Also, on the subject of compensation, you know, I should probably mention, I mean, that's something we've been thinking about a lot, too, and looking into. And we kind of at the last minute decided not to talk about it at this meeting, because I think we just need to do a little more work pulling all the data that we have together and all that stuff. But, you know, part of what we're thinking too, I mean, we've got this short-term fundraising need if we want to stay positioned to hire all the people that we can potentially hire. And we've also got a long-term need if we want GiveWell to turn into, you know, kind of an established organization that can hire more senior people at different stages of their lives and careers. I think we're going to have a conversation about what comp looks like in a way that we haven't before. And what it looks like down the line, and I think that, you know, down the line, I think that's a potential source of rising expenses in a fairly big way. So that's something that I think we're going to want to do in a future board call, maybe even not that long from now, and I think also probably we'll want to make that part of the conversation on the blog as well. But it's not that pressing. It's like, you know, anything we do, we're not talking about the next 12 months, and our fundraising issues are kind of focused on the next 12 months. But I still think it's probably good to start having the conversation now and get people's expectations aligned about what things, you know, will hopefully look like down the line for GiveWell.
I'm particularly curious, you know, of other data points, aside from, I've already talked a little bit about, you know, what GiveWell's history and forward projections a year or two are. I'm interested in, when we start talking about numbers, I'm interested in drilling down in more detail on other foundations. You mentioned just relatively briefly talking about how other foundations, you know, compare in terms of granting and things like that. And I think putting yourself in the context of foundations and also explaining sort of, you know, which foundations you chose for that comparison and how you got that data and all that, I think would be useful to me And I, if it's useful to me, I think it would probably be useful to some others as well.
You're talking about compensation right now, Phil?
No, oh no, I'm sorry. I'm back on overall
overhead percentage.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I mean, this document summarizes what we found when we looked at other foundations. We also have like a spreadsheet that, you know, that lays it all out.
If you
so
could,
I can
actually,
send,
I'd love to see the spreadsheet if you could forward it to me.
Should I do that now or should I do that after the call?
I won't digest it now, so after the call's fine.
Okay.
Do you want to give a little color there, though, Holden, about what you found?
Well, it's in the document. I mean, what we found is that 15% is around the median in terms of if you're looking at what you would have to multiply the grants by to get the operating expenses. I mean, it took us a little bit of work to really separate everything out and make sure we were looking apples to apples. I mean, we first were looking at tax returns, and the expenses included investment-related expenses. We don't have an endowment, so we had to think about how to separate that out. But then we found another form of financial statement that does separate it out. So, I mean, I don't know what exactly details you want me to get into, but I think, you know, I think basically, like, the financial statement we ended up using for foundations, the audited financials, it's, like, pretty clear, and the numbers are pretty consistent.
Just throwing in my own reaction, and again, one of the reasons I'd like to look at this a little bit, 15% strikes me as a little too high, just gut reaction, and I may be off base there because, again, it's not a very well-informed or researched reaction, but it seems to me just, you know, what seems like a right number, I don't know, 10% seems like a right number to me rather than 15, and that's totally almost random,
yeah.
But there it is. If I could see sort of a more
well, we
persuasive
to before we looked into this, but I don't know what to say except that I think I just if you're looking for what other foundations do, I'm pretty confident that we have the right picture of that right now. And we're looking at kind of well established foundations with good reputations that are impact oriented, Gates Foundation, stuff like that. So
you may be right. I don't know. I'm just saying that's what I'm saying. Additional color and a little more detail and ability to sort of parse it a little bit myself would be helpful to me, and there are probably others who would be helpful to as well.
Sure.
I'd be interested in the details too, but actually the 15% gut reaction strikes me as right in looking at other foundations just through my line of work. Sometimes it's all the way up to 20%, so I'm...
Oh, yeah, there's definitely cases where... I mean, if anything, I would say that there's definite cases when we look at the top 10 foundations in the country where it's a lot higher, and those are foundations that have pretty good reputations, and the cases where it's lower are, like, foundations that I've kind of, like, never heard of and that may not be kind of emphasizing the impact research side of things as much. I mean, that's my – so when you look at the data, I think that's my subjective impression at what comes out.
Well,
so this is Tim. I'm a bit confused by the things that are in and the things that are not, the use of the word conservative and how you mean it, and the amount of change there is here. So laying that out, one, this seems to be a fairly dramatic change in position from the last board meeting where we discussed this, where you know, I could be misremembering this, but the thought was that we were in a very good position and wouldn't need to do any significant fundraising in the next 12 months. A big shift there. Then in the description, it's hard to tell what's in and what's out and the difference between a major donor and an individual donor. And a difference between a major donor and an institution. And related to that, sort of the fundraising policy saying that the policy is to raise money primarily from individual donors and then ask major donors if we're not able to. And certainly it's my impression that that's the exact opposite of what the policy has been historically.
Okay, so let me clarify. First on major donors versus individual donors. Major donors here is a very aggressive definition of major donor, and I think the definition you have in your head is different. So, you know, what's been the case historically is that we generally don't look for support from, like, the $100 donor. We're going to we're going to people who are giving, you know, who might in another context be called major donors, people who give basically $10,000 or more a year. And we those are people we have relationships with, and we talk to them, and we ask them for support. So that's the sense in which it's historically been for major donors. We're using that term differently now. What major donor means now, there's no bright line, but I think major donor is kind of means the same as institutional donor, or it means like a donor who's big enough that they could be an institution if they wanted to, and maybe they choose instead to, you know, to piggyback off the work that GiveWell's doing, but it's someone who could hire their own staff, basically. And, you know, the kind of non-bright line that we've drawn, but I think that works probably pretty well if you look at who's doing what. $250,000 a year and under is considered individual donor, and major donor is someone who, you know, can regularly give more than that. And so
how many fall into that latter category?
Right now, basically, there's Good Ventures. There's one other major donor who I would say that we have a good relationship with, and then, you know, we're working on. We have kind of evolving relationships with other people who may turn into major donors in the future, but this is the kind of thing, you know, these are like the giant fish that it's a major investment to recruit one, and sometimes you sort of recruit one and then you get one sort of interested in what you're doing, and it's a very long-term play to be looking for major engagement from these. So I think, you know, if you're looking for who the major donors are right now that we're going to go to asking for money, it's you should probably just think about Good Ventures right now. That's probably like the most accurate way to think about this. And we didn't want to write a policy that talks about Good Ventures. I mean, that's something that's been brought up in the past. That's not a policy. The policy is general to organizations like Good Ventures that are major and significant, and that want to work significantly with us or make significant use of our research. So, you know, I wouldn't say there's no other prospects, but I think it's probably like easiest right now to think about Good Ventures as being the main representative of major donors.
So that helps clarify a lot, because yes, you're right, I had a wrong definition of those. It may be worthwhile, if we're going to start discussing this stuff publicly, to adjust terms, because I don't think I'm the only person who would misunderstand those terms and think that this was a major change in policy when it's not.
Right. I mean, there is a definition in the fundraising policy of what means what, but yeah, I mean, we could maybe come up with a different term, but I do generally intend to define that term when it's introduced.
Okay, so the $250,000 or less per year,
mm-hmm.
The way I interpret that in the definition is donations to all causes, not to GiveWell top-rated charities.
Uh-huh.
Which is it?
I guess I would say the latter.
To GiveWell top-rated charities.
I mean, we often don't know how much total people give, so we tend to find it the other. I'm not sure there's a huge difference. I think a lot of the people who give us, you know, a lot of the people who are kind of giving in that range to our top charities, that's basically the main thing they're doing. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would define it in terms of donations to things recommended by GiveWell.
Yeah, and again, just for general consumption, it is very unusual for someone who gives at that level to concentrate their giving so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so the general understanding of someone giving $250,000 is that's their total giving budget, and a portion of that is being channeled through GiveWell, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to that's what we really actually do see.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back
rule
and
of thumb.
For my own sake, I want to make sure that I really understand, when you say conservative budget, that actually means that's the most you would spend, not it's a conservative estimate and it would probably be more than that.
No. Conservative means that's the most we would spend, so what we actually spend will probably be less than that.
Yeah, that's what you said. I also did a double take when I read that. So some of your terminology is a little
uh-huh.
unconventional. Usage, I would say, or
yeah.
Confusing, maybe.
Okay. Well,
and now,
other terminology that would be great.
to that, then that final point about...
Go ahead, sorry.
To that point about the change between now and the last time we talked about this budget, am I remembering correctly that we had a conversation that you didn't anticipate needing additional fundraising?
That's right. There's a change. The change is spelled out in, I think, in the attachment A, so I'm going to pull it up right now. The change is, I would say that hiring has, I would frame this as a fully positive thing. Hiring has gone better than expected, so there's no other expenses that have risen. The only expense that has changed is non-executive director pay. That has changed because of additional anticipated hires. And that is the only change. And so that is spelled out. And basically it's just a matter of last time we had this conservative projection, that we were going to hire a certain number of people, and we usually come in under that. And I think we've hired roughly the number of people that we conservatively projected hiring. So now we're conservatively projected hiring even more people that we haven't hired yet. We generally try to have some hires in there that don't have names. In other words, people we haven't met yet. So last time, some of the people we hadn't met yet turned into actual people, and this time we've added some more on. So basically the hiring has gone, I think the hiring's gone quicker than anticipated, better than anticipated. We still have a need for it. We still have a capacity for it. So we want to do more of it than anticipated.
I mean, this comes back to a definition of conservative. So if our last conservative projection was dramatically too low.
No, our last conservative projection was, I mean, our conservative projection in terms of what we were going to do, I think, was about what happened, but it was intended to be conservative.
Can we use the conservative thing is totally throwing me. Just say like a high end projection or a maximum projection. That's much more.
Yeah, let's use aggressive, Holden. I think that's.
Well, why don't I say high end? That's what Phil wanted.
Okay, sure.
High end means a big number. That's clearer than whether conservative means a big number or a low number.
Right. Okay. I mean, we're also looking at different time periods. I mean, our last financial projection was actually for, because it was a May meeting, so we hadn't like done a full financial update. So it was actually for like fiscal year 2012, which is like starting in August. So I think if you look at how 2013 expenses are going to compare to what we said they would be at the last meeting, I think they'll be about on. Normally that high-end estimate would be a little bit higher than what ends up happening. I think these will end up pretty close. But then the expenses go up after 2013, and, you know, basically things have shifted basically 8 months on this projection. But I also want to be clear. I mean, I don't think there's any problem here. Like, we're not in any kind of a bind. The reason we're having this meeting early is because we want to have a lot of time to do this, and we want this to be relaxed. This is not a case where we're, you know, oh, holy crap, we're about to run out of money. This is like looking way into the future, and assuming that we, you know, kind of hire more than we expect to hire, but as much as we would hope to hire, then we're going to have a deficit in, you know, over the next 12 months. And that's something that we have plenty of time to deal with. And that's generally how, you know, I would say that when we did our last update, there was plenty of time to deal with things, and now there's plenty of time to deal with things. And so anyone who's kind of thinking of this is, you know, wow, like things really came in over expectations and now we're broke. That's not what's going on at all. It's just that before we said, well, there's no need to even be fundraising. And now we're saying, well, let's start fundraising. And I think
it's not necessarily the speed, you know, whether this is something that needs to be dealt with tomorrow or 4 months out. To me, there's a little bit of a magnitude question, because I mean, if you've got $1.1 million in expenses against $650,000 in revenues, that's a $450,000 shortfall. That's quite substantial. Basically, you need to take your revenues up around 65% higher than they have been. And, you know, I don't know if there's going to be a significant chunk of previous revenues have come from these foundations that are kind of a different animal. That side of things, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is probably not going to grow. So it may be possible, but it seems like, I don't know, it's a big number, big increase.
It's a big increase. I mean, we hired several people, and people cost money, and now we're going to hopefully hire several more. And
Well, it's easy. In one sense, it's easy to hire people. I mean, you can that's exaggerating, but you can always hire 20 people. I mean, there's people out there who want jobs, who'll take them, but it can be hard. And those who have a little more background on the charity side of things than me can get to this. I think it may be hard to arm twist donors to give you $450,000 that they haven't given you before. That's not necessarily something that can happen. I'm over exaggerating the ease of hiring. I understand the complexity of that, but I guess I'm saying it's a different paradigm. Getting money versus spending money. Spending money is one thing. Getting extra money is a different thing. And I guess not to be, I'm cautioning not to be blasé about how difficult that may or may not be, and that it may not come in even if you do blog posts and talk to people. You know, it may not come in where you want it to come in.
So, I mean, just to sort of assuage some of the fear you have or to clarify where we're coming from, you know, we're not saying we have this audience, we can just post some blog posts and raise a whole bunch more money than we've raised before. You know, I think that we have a more concrete sense of whom we're going to go to, how likely they are to give, and I think that, you know, neither Holden nor I has a feeling of, you know, where are we going to find this money? Like, I think we have a reasonably clear sense of where we want to start. And having this conversation now is putting a marker in the ground so you're aware that we're going to be going out to people and asking for money, but also placing a point where we can come back and reflect and say, you know, did the initial fundraising go the way that we anticipate that it will?
I guess what I'm saying is, if you want to try to raise money, that's great, and there's conversation to be had about how to best do that and what, you know, approaches and all that, and that's a part of the conversation we're having here today. What I would caution against is getting yourself into a framework where you commit to spending the money before you have gotten the commitments to raise the money, i.e. where your expenses outpace your revenues if your revenues should not go where you want them to go.
Right. So let me just – first off, I want to clarify. I haven't said, and I don't want to say, and I don't want people pointing back and saying that I said, that we think it's going to be easy to raise this money. I'm really not sure. I mean, I'm honestly not sure how easy it's going to be. It might be really hard. I recognize it's a lot of money. I said we have a lot of time, and that's true. I didn't say it was going to be easy. But I think that everything we're doing is consistent with a philosophy of basically taking the fundraising challenges we're going to face, recognizing them before they pinch, and going out and giving ourselves time to deal with that challenge. And it is a challenge, and we may fall short, and it may be hard. And we may have to scale back some of our expansion plans if it doesn't go well, although I am, you know, I'm certainly optimistic. I think we will do it. I'm not sure it'll be easy. But when I look at what we've done, it's hard for me to point the finger at where we should have done something differently. Our philosophy for a long time has been to kind of project expenses 12 months out. It's very hard to project further out than that. This is this is kind of an experimental project, and anything we do out further than 12 months is really going to be total guesswork. Project things out about 12 months. Try not to have a deficit, but also don't raise a giant surplus just because. And don't stockpile assets. And that's been a consistent philosophy of GiveWell. Our donors don't react well to the idea of just adding money to a pile of reserves. We have reserves. We have enough reserves to hold us for about 12 months easily, comfortably, and 2 years not comfortably. If we were to stop seeing revenue, we've agreed that's an appropriate amount of reserves, and that more would be too much. So, you know, people, donors, board members don't react well to us saying, well, we over the next 12 months, we don't project a deficit. We don't have a shortage of reserves, but we'd like to just raise more, just so that we can have it and have more in our reserves and have people in the habit of giving. That's never really been something that any GiveWell stakeholder have been very into. We can have a discussion about whether that's misguided, but that's how it's been.
No, point taken. Actually, in my case, you're preaching to the choir. Then I don't dispute that.
Right. So then the question is but that philosophy leads to exactly this situation. I mean, when you use that philosophy, what happens is that in May 2013, you look at the 12 months that you're able to make a projection for based on the information you have. You don't see deficit. You don't raise money. And so you're sitting here with, you know, $650,000 in projected revenue, and that's it. And then 3 months later, hiring went better than you thought. You're looking forward further now. You think you're going to hire more, and now you have a big gap. Well, we have time to address it, so we haven't run into a crisis. But you know, yeah, I mean, the fact is the reality changes, our projections change, and now there's a big fundraising gap, and I think that's just the inevitable outcome of the philosophy we've described. I struggle to see what we could have done differently that would not lead to this outcome, and I don't think this is a bad outcome. I think this is the outcome that we all signed on for when we took on this philosophy of kind of not raising money unless we do see where the deficit starts to appear. And a deficit is an excess of expenses over revenues. It's not the same as running out of money. So a deficit means we're running off reserves.
The main thing that I would not want to see happen, I guess, and yeah, I agree with what you said, and maybe you're phrasing it that way, you know, makes me reconsider things a little bit. But the main thing I would want to see is that if I wouldn't want to see you get GiveWell into a position where if GiveWell went out and tried to increase revenues, and rather than increasing them from 650 to 1.1 million, increase them from, say, 650 to 750 or 650 to 800, that caused substantial disruption to the organization and or caused GiveWell to become a little too strong of a fund. I guess two things. One, I don't want to see organizational disruption, which, you know, is just basically a question of if you hire too many people and that you're going to have some natural turnover anyways, and if people are your expense, that's probably a little bit of an overblown fear because you can just cut back hiring and or let natural turnover run its course a little bit. And then the other thing, the other thing is, as an organization, you know, organizations can become a little bit too married to, you know, well, if we yelled at 70 decibels and we didn't get to where we needed to be fundraising wise, we're going to yell at 80 decibels, 90 decibels, 110 decibels until we get there, and that's and it can get to a point where it could damage the message.
So another principle that I think we've agreed to, and that I think is really important, is the principle of hiring aggressively, and a principle of trying to be everything we can be. And I think we would run into real trouble. I'm okay with this kind of not too loud, not too greedy. I mean, I like it. I like this don't ask for money when you don't see the projected need philosophy. I think it's a great thing. But I think when combined with the principle you're sort of espousing, like be super conservative about who you hire and about the capacity you grow, you're just going to end up with an organization that doesn't grow. I mean, maybe at all, given the way that we work, or maybe just way too slowly. And I think that is something that our stakeholders would really, really hate, because, you know, the flip side of this, while our stakeholders really don't like giving us money that is just going to sit there, and I don't blame them, and I'm on board with what we do, another thing our stakeholders really don't like is the feeling that we're sitting on our hands, and that we're not growing as fast as we could be to do the most good, especially when the reason is money, because we do, you know, we get a lot of people saying, I would like to give you money if I thought it would make a difference to your mission. And the only reason I don't, you know, I don't want to give you money if it doesn't make a difference to your mission, but I also would be, like, really upset if you guys were kind of, you know, just not spending money because of some sort of principles about not dialing up fundraising too fast, because I want to give you that money and I want to see you higher. And there's a lot, you know, among I think everyone, our board, our donors, everyone who follows GiveWell, there's a lot of frustration with how small we are and with how little we do, and a lot of there's some impatience, and I feel it too, and desire for us to have more staff and to do more things and to look into more things and more depth and more breadth. I mean, people want all kinds of things from GiveWell. So, you know, I think when you combine those two principles, when you say, number one, we're not going to ask for money when we can't kind of project the need, and number two, we're ambitious and we're going to hire people when we can, you're going to end up with some big projected deficits, and as long as you have time to deal with those deficits, I think it's fine. In terms of what I think is going to happen from here, you know, I think we're going to fundraise at a level of decibels, whatever you want to call it, that is equivalent to basically putting this stuff out on the blog and making it very clear that we need money from the blog. And you know, calling up people who we feel comfortable asking for money, And that's probably the level we're going to be at. And I think I don't really expect to ratchet the level beyond that. I do not expect to reorganize our website around soliciting for us. I strongly, strongly don't expect that. And if we did do that, that would be cause for another board meeting. But I think what we're going to do now is we're going to take this deficit and we're going to take this time horizon and we're going to take the measures I said and we're going to try and raise the money.
So can I ask for the second sort of part that you're saying, meeting with people directly and asking for gifts, would you mind keeping track of all of that? You know, we called so many people a week and we anticipated those people would have, you know, this, they would be this willing to give to us, they did or they did not, and if you, you know, keep 6 months of records of that, and then when we gather again, you can show us, you know, these are the meetings we had, these are the calls we had, these are how they all turned out, then I think that will give us a better sense of understanding, okay, this is how 6 months after that could then go.
Yeah, we'd be happy to track that. I think it makes sense for us to track that. I think that's a good suggestion.
I will briefly comment that I've been spending so much time working on 2014-2015 budgets that I forgot that it wasn't 2014 when I was looking at this, which colors one's perspective on what this says dramatically, by the way.
Thanks for that clarification.
Like, wow, how did we get this far off this fast?
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally, like, I hear what people are saying. That's why we called this meeting. And I think there's going to be more of this. I mean, I think we're going to have to address, you know, we're going to want to expand more. There's other reasons that I think expenses will be going up further down the line. I mean, we want this to be an expanding organization. And it won't necessarily be linear and it won't necessarily be slow because it can be hard when you're new into a project to figure out where anyone fits in, but when you get a little more down, you can grow faster and we'll want to. So I think that we are going to have probably more conversations like this, and I think the natural consequence of the two very important principles that I outlined is a lot of times you pull up the budget and you're like, wow, there's a big gap. We better go out and do some fundraising. And you have time to do it, but it's a big gap. And, you know, and the other thing, I mean, I also think I'm also very much recognizing that, hey, it's possible that our fundraising doesn't go as well as we hoped and we can't quite sustain the capacity that we want. That's always a possibility, but that's a possibility that I visualized. It's not something that would crush us. We're not making the kind of commitments that would cause a catastrophe. It's remember, for a lot of this budget is based on people who we could theoretically hire, and they're not named in the budget because we don't know who they are. So they're not actual employees. They're projected hypothetical employees. So the easiest thing to do, right, is to cut those. And then if you have to, I mean, I really don't anticipate this happening. I think it's highly unlikely. But, you know, in terms of reducing staff, that's another – I mean, all our employees are at will. That's another measure that one has. So I just don't – there's no, like, long-term contracts we've got here that are going to cause a bankruptcy. I mean, basically, if we can't raise the money that we want to raise – then we won't have the size that we want to have, and that's the only consequence.
I just want to add that, I mean, Tom said this before, but it's worth remembering that recruiting was a big goal for the year, and I think, you know, Holden and Ellie are doing a great job at it. I'm really impressed with the caliber of people they're bringing in, and I'm really grateful that they're adding capacity. And definitely one of the conversations we're going to have is, like, what's the appropriate level for Good Ventures to be supporting GiveWell, and we'll probably do that soon. So, you know, just my perspective in 2 cents.
Can I just ask, Carrie, are you guys – is Good Ventures going to play any role in the fundraising, you know, either co-marketing or you know, sort of vouching for GiveWell? And are there branding issues or organizational identity issues that we should think about if you guys are planning anything like that?
We haven't talked about anything like that. I mean, as far as I know, and Holden, you can correct me, but, you know, they're going to post on the blog. They're going to have their conversations with their core supporters, including us, but they haven't asked us to do any fundraising on their behalf.
Yeah.
I think the best fundraising we do is going to be from people that appreciate us and are connected to us. So I think to the extent to the extent they're interested in Good Ventures vouching for us, I think we'll ask Good Ventures to do that, and I would expect that to go well. You know, I think we're less likely to start asking Good Ventures for intros to people that we don't know very well as potential core supporters. I mean, our strategy has been to start with someone as a fan and cultivate them into a core supporter. And we really, we're always recruiting for fans, and it's trying to, you know, fundraising means turning fans into supporters more than it means recruiting for supporters. So that's how I expect things to play out. And if we wanted to change course and we wanted, again, to really try and pull in some cold supporters, that's where I'd want to call another meeting. But I'm not really
expecting that. And we promote GiveWell pretty aggressively among our network, but at the same time, I see that as sort of a longer-term play, too. I mean, we're recruiting fans for GiveWell, and then it's kind of up to GiveWell to, you know, convert fans to supporters as, you know, as needed.
Is there anything left, or is it likely to be rewarding for the time invested to pursue anything more at the foundation level? I know you've talked about, you know, foundations, a couple of foundations are already major supporters and have been for some time. I don't know how big the network, you know, I don't know if there's more on that end, or is that or are you guys pretty much kind of at the top of where you're likely to be without undue effort?
I'm going to ask the two foundations that support us now if they consider raising the size of their grant. I think that's about as much as there's like one other that I might think about asking, and that would be kind of, I guess I won't elaborate on that. I mean, you know, in terms of foundations that really have philanthropy programs, I mean, the only one that is even arguably kind of a categorical match for GiveWell is Hewlett. And then there's this other institution that, you know, we're part of what, I don't actually know what their programs actually are, but I think we have a good enough sense of the landscape that I don't think there's other good fits, really. But I think I will ask the two that support us now to consider
reasons. One argument you can make there, you know, is hey, you know, look at how we've done. You know, our numbers have gone, you know, look at how we've grown, basically. And
yeah, exactly. That's definitely the argument I'll make, yeah. I want to call people's attention it's in the document, but just to make sure people are aware, you know, this budget excludes some fairly major expenses that are basically, like, put in the bucket of this, like, major donor, paid for by major donor thing. And so the two expenses are one, office space. So, I mean, that's entered into the budget as a zero because that's an in-kind donation from Good Ventures. And then two is contractors. So, basically the research we're doing, we're hiring contractors to look into certain things. I'm happy to elaborate on our research plans and where those fit in. And, you know, that's not building our staff. That's not building our capacity. And so kind of along the lines of the philosophy outlined in that document, those have been expenses that have been in one way or another kind of put in the bucket of Good Ventures as supporting this work, whether through a grant or an in-kind donation. Just to make sure people are aware of that. Neither of the expenses is huge, right? So the contractors we're probably estimating as $100,000 total over the next year. And the office space, I actually don't know, but it's probably in a similar ballpark. But I want people to be aware of that.
So is it right to think about those as completely variable expenses related to what major donors are asking for, and if they don't ask for them or won't pay for them, then we don't incur those expenses? I mean, obviously that's not true of rent.
Yeah, I think the contractors is definitely right to think of that way. I think that the rent is not, because we would obviously have to pay some sort of rent, but I think we would like, if, you know, if Good Ventures is no longer interested in that support, we would dramatically lower the rent from what it is now. But yeah, it would appear in the budget and it would be an expense.
So this isn't on the agenda, and probably there will be no conclusions reached tonight, but I do feel like since you're initiating this conversation about fundraising, we should at some point initiate a conversation about what the board's practical responsibility should be toward that goal. You know, when I joined, I asked Holden if there was a specific give amount that a board member had to give to your operating expenses, and he said no, which was a surprise to me. And I'm not sure, you know, folks serve on other boards as well and have similar experience of having usually some type of give requirement. At the very least, I think as you're going out and asking people to support you, you may get the question of what's your board giving percentage? And to be able to say 100% is usually a persuasive thing. So I throw that out there as something to begin to think about.
Yeah, I think that's fair to bring up. I mean, I will just say on this call, I mean, I don't anticipate this being an issue. I think we've always kind of operated on a clean separation of board members who kind of help govern the organization and then people who are supporters. Are obviously, we want the board to be fans of GiveWell. But, you know, in terms of the real impact of asking for board contributions on our picture, I think the impact would probably be small. As far as the symbolic impact, I also think that would be small, just based on who it is that our fans are and how they operate. And, you know, generally there are people on the board who contribute to GiveWell. And there are people on the board who help us find donors, and there are people on the board who help us think about fundraising, but these are just, they're not official responsibilities of board members, and I don't really expect this to be an issue. If it is, we will definitely bring it up. So I think it's a good thing to keep in mind. If we start getting the question, you know, how much of your board contributes, we will talk about whether it's worth it to institute a policy, but this isn't really something I anticipate.
Holden, the breakdown in revenues by quarter, I think, obscures more than it illuminates.
Uh-huh.
Because
as far as I know,
there's no particular reason for those revenues to be in those quarters. That's essentially just happenstance.
Yeah, it's just happenstance. We generally do a different report on revenues that kind of breaks them down by donation size and likelihood of recurring. I can send that out to the board after this meeting if they want, kind of the updated version. I just didn't include it this time because it didn't seem like a major focus. I mean, the big picture to me was the total and the deficit. But, you know, we can go over it. I mean, we went over it at the last meeting in May, and it hasn't really changed at all. So
yeah, and that's not the thing I'm interested in. It's just, you know, some of just looking at this,
mm-hmm.
it looks exceedingly strange.
Mm-hmm.
Our revenue curve, and that in May and July we're anticipating just $10,000 of revenue when we had $400,000 in revenue prior to that.
Mm-hmm. It's a giving season thing, and it's just a matter of, I mean, the emphasis of this budget is on showing expenses, and then we put revenue on there for you to look at it.
What I would suggest is on an ongoing basis, I think this is a useful chart, but what I would do is take the expected 12 months of revenue and then average it out,
okay.
Which says more to me than...
Rather than doing that, which might be misleading, it might imply that there is no fourth quarter bump, just don't even put the revenue at the quarter level, put the revenue at the year level.
I think it's probably just best to blank it out at the quarter level just to not distract people. Because, I mean, what's easy for me from a spreadsheet perspective is just to throw that line in there, and I threw it in there because then the total's in there. But if it's not distracting people that there's quarterly numbers, I'll just blank those out.
One other thing that might be helpful, I guess, in thinking about this for those of us who, you know, are not thinking about this on a daily basis, and also for the blog readers who, you know, maybe thinking about this on a less frequent basis, is to say, you know, we've had, say, in 2010, 2011, 2012, this budget, this many staffers, and we've produced this amount of research. You know, by growing, which is what we hope to do. Here are the areas that we have not researched. You know, here's what we can do that's more, rather than just here's the extra, but functionally, rather than just sort of a numbers approach, saying these are things that we haven't researched in the past that we'd like to, or areas we can grow into, or whatever. Because, you know, I'm seeing this 8 analysts or 12 or whatever versus, you know, 6, which is nice, but I think bringing that down, bringing that a little further down the thought process into, you know, specific areas and depth of research that, you know, you'd like to go into going forward, and areas that you might not be able to hit if you don't grow, but could hit, you know, the marginal growth, the, you know, what does the marginal dollar buy you? I guess that's one of GiveWell's frequent topics in regards to charities. You know, what does a marginal dollar to AMF generate, or a marginal dollar to somebody else? So what does a marginal dollar of operational cost for GiveWell produce?
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly, I wrote it down. I think we can certainly address that question. I think it's, I mean, a lot of the answer, I mean, it's easier to just talk about all of the things we want to do and then talk about how many staff we'll have, because it's hard to really project linearly from staff to tasks. But I think that's how we want to share.
The structure of how you approach the topic is whatever works best. But I think as a topic, as a general topic, you know, I think that's a useful one for folks to consider.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good point. Thanks. Thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I would maybe kind of want to maybe put a little more emphasis on Bridget's thought about, are there ways we can help? And I don't know to what extent you might want our help, if there are contacts that would be useful, if you want us to, would it be helpful to go into our LinkedIn profiles and see how far we are, how many degrees of separation we are from foundation people? The events, I guess, have not typically been that productive, but can we help? I mean, what would you like us to do? I understand that maybe mandatory participation isn't a high priority, but are there ways we can help?
Yeah. I mean, again, I kind of – the way we've always run GiveWell is we're very kind of – the board to us is kind of this pure governance thing. And, you know, we want certain people who are important supporters and fans to be on it, because we think those are the people who should be governing, but it's governance. And then when we need help, we just go to the people who make most sense to go to for help, and some of those people are on the board and some of them aren't, with a specific thing we're looking for help with. So, you know, there times we've probably reached out to all of you individually for something specific, and it's not because, you know, there's no, like, step in the process that says, you know, at this step, go to the board members. Except as, insofar as it has to do with governance. So, you know, we thought you guys should be in the loop that we're doing this. So, I mean, that said, I mean, we will, I think we have a sense of who are the people we should go to for help with different things, and we'll keep that in mind. We certainly appreciate the willingness to help. I do just want to kind of observe, you know, in terms of, I think it's a really important conversation to have, the one we've been having. I want to point out also that the thing about the fundraising philosophy and the 15% and the major donors, that's probably the most unconventional thing in this document, in terms of something that, you know, kind of GiveWell being in an unusual situation and handling things a little bit unusually. I mean, you know, a startup kind of raising its expected expenses by a substantial amount is something that happens. This thing is something that I kind of haven't seen before and that we kind of had to make up on our own. So I would encourage people to do some reflection on it and to just be aware that this isn't, you know, there's nothing off the shelf here. There's no sense that this is a common situation. There's a common way of dealing with it. It really was us just making up kind of a philosophy that made the most sense to us. So I want to highlight that for people. The whole arrangement with the 15% number, and then the role of major donors and retail donors, and the fact that, you know, we kind of have these contractors that are put in a different bucket because they're associated with major donors. That's all. I think it hasn't gotten as much kind of maybe attention or concern in this meeting as the other stuff, and maybe that's completely justified. But I just want to highlight that.
I'm not quite sure what you just said. Are you referring to the fact that, I guess, the one topic that was maybe a little unclear to me reading this document, maybe this is what you're trying to get at, but I didn't quite follow it, is this whole – let's drill down. I know you don't want to make a policy about Good Ventures, but since Good Ventures is the primary example. So Good Ventures is providing benefits and also incurring expenses, so to speak, in terms of additional things. Is that what you're referring to, the difference between how Good Ventures reflects impacts revenues and expenses versus how kind of everybody else does?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm talking about is attachment B. I mean, there was a one of the two documents we sent was just on this topic, and I just feel like that topic maybe hasn't gotten as much attention as the other topic in this meeting. It does have to do with kind of this idea of having two buckets of expenses, one that is kind of the core GiveWell expenses and one that is kind of the GiveWell expenses associated with major donors. And kind of thinking about them in two separate ways, like us showing you the budget without the contractor expenses in it, and that sort of thing.
It does seem unusual, but I feel like I don't have the knowledge of how other foundations do their expenses to know exactly how different it is.
I mean, there's nothing unusual, to be clear. There's no unusual accounting practices here. This doesn't impact anything about our accounting or our books or anything like that. It's a conceptual way of thinking about whom we're trying to raise money for and for what and how we present information to our board. And the reason that it's unusual, I think, is because it's a little bit unusual in terms of how we're working with Good Ventures is itself a little bit, we've been over that and we've had a lot of meetings about this, but that's not something that you see like hundreds of examples of. And so we're trying to just think about, conceptually when there's a major donor that we work with closely, how should we think about when to raise money from groups other than that major donor and when should we primarily be raising money from that major donor for expenses that are incurred as a function of working with that major donor or that are that are related to working with that major donor. So that's kind of the situation. So there's nothing, there's nothing unorthodox. There's nothing impacting kind of key practices like accounting or bookkeeping. But it's more just how are we thinking about the two different buckets of fundraising. And
I didn't mean to imply that. What seemed unusual was it feels like usually when you're working with smaller groups of donors, your return on investment is low, and when you start working with the big donors, that's when your percentage of expenses drops because now you're getting much bigger gifts for the amount of time that you're putting in. So the idea that expenses
right.
would bump up now that you're working with major donors feels a little flipped.
Well, they don't. The expense ratio, I don't think, goes up. The expenses go up, right? So it's
okay.
more than that.
Yeah.
Like, the hypothetical here is, let's say you expect $9 million from individual donors and, just make up a number, like another $9 million from major donors. So what you do is you kind of, like, you first think about, okay, well, if we were just raising from individual donors, that alone would justify spending up to $1.35 million on our own operating, and let's go try and raise that money from a broad, diversified base. But now we actually want to spend $1.7 million on the total $18 million that we're moving, and that is a lower ratio, but it's a higher expenses, and it's like
right.
we can't really justify raising $1.75 million from this broad base of people when the broad base only is projecting $9 million, but we can justify that if we account for the other source of money, the major donor that accounts for $9 million. And so because of thinking about it that way, let's try and make sure that money is coming from major donors and we aren't asking individuals for that money. So, another reason it's an unusual policy is because I don't think it's very common for a nonprofit to kind of have a policy about when they're fundraising and how much they're fundraising and how much they want. I think it is somewhat common for nonprofits to kind of have a policy of, we raise as many dollars as we can, and that's not the GiveWell policy, and, there is kind of an attitude here of often not asking for money or often telling people not to donate to us. And so figuring out when we do that and how we think about that is a lot of what's going on here.
And just to bring us back from the theoretical into the actual, while the policy is, GiveWell can justify raising up to 50%, 15% of money moved from individual donors, in reality, you'll raise less than, you're projecting needing less than that, and some of that will come from major donors, not only individual donors.
Right. So that's for now, but we are trying to establish
for now,
something.
Right.
For what it's worth, the theory doesn't seem strange to me when looked at it from a consulting perspective. It's the way of thinking about it I would expect to see in a consulting practice that has a couple of very, very large clients and then has to keep the lights on for the normal client who walks through the door.
Okay, good. Good. So we had an idea that wasn't strange. That's always yeah. Okay, other thoughts?
Parliamentary business to do here, right? This is just basically informative.
This is just informative.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't have anything else on the agenda. I think we will probably be keeping – we'll definitely be keeping you guys posted, and we'll probably be doing a future meeting about compensation, which is a little bit of a longer-term issue. But, yeah, I mean, if there's nothing else, then maybe, Tom, just if you want to adjourn the meeting.
Sure. I adjourn the meeting.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.